Good morning. Good morning. Good morning and welcome to Thursday Morning Roundtable. My name is Sandra Barrett, and on behalf of University College of Syracuse University, it's my pleasure to welcome you here today to the roundtable. I have a few announcements before we get started. One is sad news for those of you who didn't notice in the paper. One of our longtime members, Ed Loveland, passed away last week. He was an engineer for a number of years, and of course, as all of our members, very civically engaged, had been ill for a while. So in case you had missed that and wanted to send condolences to his family, I wanted you to know that. Also wanted to point out good news that one of our, again, longtime members, Margaret Charters, is going to be recognized for her many contributions to literacy by the Syracuse School District Educational Foundation at their breakfast on Saturday, March 31st. So, yay. Thank you, Margaret, here. But anyway, so I'm sure that if you would like to attend that, we can get you the information that you need. That reminds me that nominations for the TMR Community Service Award are due 2 weeks from this minute. So either get us your nomination or in the mail or email it or hand it to me, and we'll be doing that presentation in April. The last couple of weeks we've been talking about national issues. You'll recall 2 weeks ago we had retired Colonel Ann Wright. She was here to talk about the use of drones in warfare. She had just been released from DeWitt Town Court, thankfully, for her taking part in a demonstration. And then, of course, very much in the news, last week, Professor Tom Keck, Political Science Department at SU, was talking to us about the Supreme Court docket and the cases, particularly the healthcare case that is up before the Supreme Court now. So that informed us. We're more informed. We're you know, reading and listening about it. So that's helping. So I wanted to give you a heads up, though, for the next 2 weeks, because even though I know you come no matter who the speaker is or you listen no matter what, you like to do your homework and get your questions in order. So I'll let you know that next week, Dominic Robinson, who's the head of Northside Urban Partnership, Northside UP, is going to be speaking. And I'll also let you know, I just asked Sarah McElvain if she'd introduce him. So that by itself is worth the price of admission, right? I'll have to give Dominic a heads up on that. And in 2 weeks, March 29th, Ryan McMahon, not to be confused with McMahon Ryan, which is what we're talking about today, but Ryan McMahon, who is the new chair of the county legislature, is going to be speaking to us. And that's notable because while Mr. McMahon was a city councilor, he's a freshman county legislator from the city and was elected by his peers as the chair. So that's very interesting. So he'll be talking to us about their agenda. And so that's the next 2 weeks. See you all here. Right now, it's my pleasure to introduce TMR member Patty Giancola, who's a development director at McMahon Ryan Child Advocacy Center, to introduce Julie Cecil. Thanks, Patty. Careful.
Okay, thanks. Got to bring that down. Good morning, everyone. I don't think I've been here early enough for any introductions in my 3 years of being a member here, but when you're introducing your boss, I guess it's the time to be here, isn't it? So it's with great pleasure that I get to introduce Julie Cecil. I've been with McMahon Ryan Child Advocacy Center for just about a year, probably this week, Julie, right? And I have to say she's someone that certainly has passion for each child victim that comes through our door and their families. And it's just interesting work when you work beside someone, you just see that that's what's deep in her is the passion for it. I'm just going to give you the Dale Carnegie introduction, though. Julie's a local gal. She went to high school at Bishop Ludden, grew up in the Strathmore area. She went on to Siena for her undergraduate, and she's a graduate of SU's College of Law. She has been the executive director of McMahon Ryan since January of 2008, 4 years, right? 4 years as executive director. And in her position as executive director, she's also the coordinator for the CART team. And you're going to learn a little bit about some of our acronyms we learned, but CART team is very instrumental to the coordination of services that our center does oversee. So, Julie lives in the Strathmore section, she grew up in the Strathmore section, but she lives in the Winkworth area, and she has three children with her husband, James, who you might know of as well, too. So it's with great pleasure I get to introduce Julie Cecil.
Good morning, everyone. I was told that you're very supportive and friendly. Okay. Good? Can you hear me now? Bueller? I've been told that you are all very supportive and friendly, so I'm very excited about having that kind of a group. I have some LGSers, fellow LGSers out there. Judge Hannah Zack, obviously I've done some family court. Gay, we've worked, I worked for the Department of Social Services for a little while, so there are a lot of friendly faces out here, so thank you very much for having me and McMahon Ryan Child Advocacy Center this morning. I want to tell you really quick, I always get up early in the morning, obviously, but I made my 13-year-old move a little bit faster this morning to get her to school, and on the way to school, she said, Mom, I forgot my lunch. So once again, Mother of the Year Award. The McMahon Ryan Child Advocacy Center, our mission is to be dedicated to ending child abuse through intervention and education. And as I go through talking to you today, hopefully you'll see how we actually do all that. Oh. Nationally, statistics, 1 in 4 girls and 1 in 6 boys will be sexually abused by the time that they turn 18. 1 in 4 girls and 1 in 6 boys. Think about the children in your lives. The statistics are against our children. If that remains true, according to Chris Newland of the National Children's Alliance, see, I told you, who did I tell? It's going without me flipping. So I apologize. If that remains true, in 18 years, we will have over 15 million children who have been sexually abused. Nationally, 4 children die each day as a result of abuse or neglect, and a child abuse neglect is the leading cause for children that are 4 or younger. What is a child advocacy center? Child advocacy centers really haven't been around that long. They started in the 1980s with a guy named Bud Kramer down in Alabama. He actually is a senator, I believe, still. But he was a prosecutor. And what he found was is that the system that we were all part of was actually re-traumatizing the children. He had a young lady who had been sexually abused by relatives and neighbors. She had been interviewed almost 27 times by the time that he went to trial. So what was happening is every time that child had to retell her story, she was being re-traumatized by the people who were trying to help her. So he decided that he really needed to have the community and all those systems and all those agencies come together and act as a multidisciplinary team for those children in a child-friendly, safe environment. So a child advocacy center program is represented by some core disciplines. Law enforcement, child protective, prosecution, mental health, medical, advocacy, and they all work together hopefully to reduce that trauma and to give all those services to those children who have been either serious physically abused or sexually abused. Give you a really brief history and why the history is important to where we are today. Back in 1998, the McMahon-Ryan families had a dentist office over on 509 West Onondaga, right in between Midland and South Ave. And it went empty for a few years. And so the family kind of got together and said, what can we do to give back to the community? And so they actually went and did kind of an informal survey. One of the things that they thought was missing and what the community thought was missing was a child advocacy center. So they worked with the district attorney's office, the then Ripe Crisis Center, Catholic Charities, Clear Channels, and a Dr. Ann Botash. Dr. Ann Botash is a nationally known child abuse pediatrician here in Onondaga County at Giles Sound Children's Hospital. It was her dream, too, to have a child advocacy center where she could help all those sexually abused children that she was seeing. We opened our doors in April of 2002 over at 509 West Onondaga. Our initial goal was to be a meeting place for the then existing Child Abuse Council and Coalition, also a hub for the Child Abuse Response Team, and also a child-friendly location so that children could be brought to a home setting, in some sense, to be interviewed, instead of going to the Sheriff's Department, the City Police, Public Safety Building. We also wanted to be an education or resource for the community and mandated reporters and professionals. One of the things that child advocacy centers are reactive. McMahon Ryan wanted to be proactive, so we also wanted to do a lot of community awareness and education. As we grew, we did become an expanded role. It became the coordinator for the Child Abuse Response Team. We hosted the CARE Clinic, the Child Abuse Referral and Evaluation Clinic through the Giles Sound Children's Hospital. It was a part-time medical clinic at 509 West Onondaga. We also had a sheriff detective there full-time and a child protective worker from the Sex Abuse Investigation Unit there full-time. And then again, we just continued to provide education into the community. We started a program called the High Five Program. Later in the slide, you're going to see if the medical team sees 300 kids in a year, most of those kids, 135 of them, almost half of them, are six or younger. So we started this program called the High Five Program, and it targets children through kindergarten through second grade. Most school districts don't start doing child abuse prevention until fourth, fifth, and sixth grade. Some do them younger, but most of them are in the later years. Again, based on the kids that we were seeing in the numbers, that was almost too late. So we really wanted to start a program. So we started a program about 2.5 years ago called the High Five Program. Challenges at 509. It was a wonderful building. It was very homey, but we ran out of space, to be honest with you. Really quickly, we had all these different individuals in our building, and it was really hard to, it wasn't handicap accessible. Really quick story, our mental health provider, we had hired a mental health provider, and our mental health provider ended up in the bathroom. We took out all the fixtures out of the bathroom, painted it, put louvered doors on the shower, and that was her office. So that was kind of, we got creative, but it was really something, obviously, that we thought that we kind of had outgrown the 509 West Onondaga. But also what we wanted to do is bring more of those different individuals, part of that child abuse response team, in and be co-located. So we went to all the different agencies that are made up of the child abuse response team, and we said to them, if we could find a building and you would co-locate with us, would you do that? And they all were wonderful, and they said yes. I cannot impress upon you, and I'm going to keep saying this, the Child Abuse Response Team is a team, and these team members really did an amazing job, government, not-for-profit, coming together at the table and really for a good 2 years, putting together how we were going to actually see this building come to fruition. They were there from the very beginning, whether it was picking out the color in the building, phone systems, whatever. They really put a lot of thought into how the children would come into the building, how they would be seen in the building, and how we as a team could work together. And it's really an amazing thing to, I don't want to quote Visa, but it is priceless. It really is amazing. So we went to the agencies. A child advocacy center nationally as an accepted standard for a quality intervention and standard for sexually abused and serious physical injuries. We bring all the essential services together in a child-friendly place. Hopefully it is child-focused. Again, our colors, our waiting rooms, everything is child-focused. And as soon as those families walk through the door, they will have a full range of mental health, medical, child protective, law enforcement, advocacy as soon as they walk through that front door. The communication will be maximized. And also, it will save the community money. Our new home is Reed Hall for some of you, the old University College buildings. We took over Reed Hall. We've moved from a 3,000 square foot building to a 30,000 square foot building. That 30,000 square foot building, I'm going to tell you, obviously, all who's in there. But we've taken up pretty much the whole building. It's really great. We moved in, McMahon Ryan moved in June of 2011. Law enforcement and Child Protective moved in August. Child Protective is the sex abuse unit. Law enforcement is the city police and the sheriff's abused persons unit. And then our full-time medical clinic through the care clinic moved in November. So let me tell you who's there. The care clinic, child abuse referral and evaluation. We have two pediatricians who are certified board child abuse pediatricians. There's only about 184 of them in the country. We have two of them here in Onondaga County. They are through the Gallows Islands Children's Hospital, and they are through our care clinic. They bring with them a nurse practitioner, a social worker, an education person, and registered nurse. We have two exam rooms for the care clinic in our building. Is a full-time medical clinic. The care clinic, again, is through Galisana's Children's Hospital. We, McMahon Ryan, the Child Advocacy Center, and the people who are in our building primarily take care of Onondaga County. However, the care clinic, because it's through the Galisana's Children's Hospital, they have a 16-county region. So any kids that are actually admitted into the hospital, their follow-up care will be going through the Child Advocacy Center to see Dr. Botash or Dr. Pekarski. So we will see other kids through other counties. Onondaga County Department of Social Services Sex Abuse Investigation Unit. We have seven individuals from Child Protective. They are, again, a specialized unit. They handle serious physical, sex abuse, and child fatalities. They are there full-time in our building. They work very closely with the law enforcement piece because of the joint investigations. We have the Onondaga County Sheriff's Office Abused Persons Unit and also the Syracuse Police Abused Persons Unit. We have 14 detectives with them, both there. They're full-time. That's their new home. Instead of being the Sheriff's Department, they are there full-time. Onondaga County was ahead of a lot of other counties 20 years ago. They actually got together with all the towns and villages and said that we really need to have a specialized unit that can handle abused persons cases. So the towns and villages were, so that an individual is trained specifically in forensic interviewing, child appropriate training, development. So the towns and villages were great. They signed an MOU. So any cases that are either adult or children will actually go through the sheriff's or the city police abused persons unit. So adults and children go through these units. Vera House is a great collaborator for us. We don't want to necessarily duplicate services, so Vera House has been a great collaborator. They have a full-time mental health provider there and a child and family advocate there full-time. The Child Fatality Review Team Coordinator is in our building also. McMahon Ryan has two child and family advocates and two mental health providers, and then our other core staff is there also. So what the team, and when I say we did is we literally took 50 to 60 people from their different agencies and co-located them all under one roof. Some of the new buildings highlights. We have a training room up to 65 people. It's getting a lot of use for training, for professional trainings for our team, but also for community agencies. We have a small training room that is webinar and e-conferencing. I've been trying to convince Dr. Botash that that's the wave of the future. She has does some really great webinars. We've got all this great new equipment, so I'm trying to get her to actually use the new equipment. But she has this great new office in our building. She doesn't want to leave her office. 4 child interview rooms, 4 adult victim interview rooms, 2 medical exam rooms, and a play and family therapy room. I'm going to show you some pictures. Can't probably see it too well, but we have some really nice lights. The colors are orange and green, and blues and purples. We have pops of colors in the carpet. It's really a welcoming environment for children, but it's also a great environment for the adults that are in the building too. We have a mental health waiting room. Again, nice colors, child friendly. A play therapy room. Those of you that have any therapy background, we have a sand tray that seems to get everybody excited about. We have a sand tray there. Child interview room. And again, as well as the Syracuse Police and the Sheriff's Department did to make it child-friendly over in the Sheriff's Department, they really did try very hard, and it was friendly. Imagine a 5-year-old going to the Sheriff's Department. We as adults, I say this all the time, we as adults that don't even do anything wrong go and visit the sheriff's department, we're nervous, right? And I love our law enforcement, but they still make me nervous, you know? Imagine, again, a 5-year-old having to go to the sheriff's department. Instead, now they'll be able to come to the Child Advocacy Center and meet those law enforcement that are not in uniform in Child Protective, that Sex Abuse Investigation Unit. In a child-friendly place. And that's a picture of our training room. Per the New York State Central Registry, in 2010, Onondaga County had over 5,000 child abuse hotline calls for abuse and maltreatment. Those reports equaled over 9,000 children. That's abuse and maltreatment, so it's not just sex abuse. The sex abuse is probably about 400, 500 kids. So I want to make sure everybody understands is that our unit handles only serious physical and sex abuse that are in our building. So Child Protective, that unit only handles those. The rest of those types of cases are actually still done with the Department of Social Services and the Civic Center. And again, the Department of Social Services has a great team. The care team saw over 300 kids in 2010, and again, 135 were 6 or younger. Since August 2011, we started to keep numbers. 372 child interviews were done in our building from August 2nd to beginning of March. Compared to our old site, the 9 months prior to us going to this new building, we had 64 interviews. Again, it's all those people coming through one door, and so that we can have a real clear picture of how many interviews everybody's really doing. I mean, these men and women are doing an amazing job every day in interviewing these kids. So 372 interviews, 546 mental health appointments, and because care just came in the end of November, they've had only 54, but I'm positive they're going to have staggering more. Per the National Child Advocacy Center, a child advocacy center can generate almost $1,000 per case of savings. Again, that efficiency, that coordination, that communication, to have that instant access, it would save approximately $1,000. Collaboration, again, I cannot say enough. The Department of Social Services, the county, the city police, Vera House, everybody, district attorney, the county attorneys, all of those individuals really did an amazing job at collaborating. Joint investigations, efficiency, communication, and one-stop shop for these families. Communications, again, the law enforcement and child protective piece, they will tell you when child protective, that unit gets that state central registry report on a child abuse case, they literally, all they have to do is walk across the hall and talk to law enforcement and see how they're going to handle it. Law enforcement only has to go up a flight of stairs to talk to Dr. Ann Botash or Ann Galloway from the sexual assault nurse examiners to get information on the medical. Costs of child abuse. According to New York State, Prevent Child Abuse New York, child abuse costs, direct and indirect, $2.4 billion a year, just in New York State. Prevent Child Abuse in America estimates that national costs are about $94 billion. Upcoming events. You all have some really fun pinwheels in front of you. April is Child Abuse Awareness Month. Hopefully you're going to see a lot of information coming out in April about Child Abuse Awareness Month. We don't like to keep it just to April because we want, obviously, to be continuously talking about it all year round. But the pinwheels are a positive thing. As difficult as child abuse is to talk about, we wanted to do something positive also. These pinwheels represent adults that are willing to stand up and advocate for our children. It doesn't represent the number of children that have been abused. It's really a positive thing. So hopefully you're going to see many. We have 7,000 pinwheels to plant in the community. So we will have community gardens throughout the whole county and at schools. So hopefully when you see them, a smile will come across your face. I had a gentleman earlier that said he was going to take them to his grandchildren. That's what it's all about. It's about having a nice, healthy, supportive family and having adults actually say that we want that in our community. Crime Victim Vigil, every year in April, we also collaborate with many agencies. I encourage you to partake in different events in April. One is the Crime Victim Vigil. It's on April 25th at 5 o'clock at the Cathedral. They have an amazing choir, the Gay and Lesbian Choir, that goes and sings. There are going to be numerous speakers, and there also will be some survivors from crimes that will actually light candles and speak also. Unprecedented media collaboration. The media has come together, meaning radio and TV, and put aside so many different things. Again, another amazing collaboration. And they're going to put together a one-hour special on protecting our children, child abuse. So they have been working for the last 2 months and putting together, so you're going to see personalities from all the different TV channels and Clear Channels and Cumulus will be doing literally a packaged one-hour special simulcast at 7 o'clock on April 25th on all the channels. They haven't done this, I guess, since in the early 90s when they did something either on teen drugs or drunk driving. I can't remember what they said, but this is really something. So they've went and they've interviewed all the different agencies. They have different storylines. So there's going to be 12 snippets of different things, but an hour-long media collaboration. It's really amazing. The prom. We have the prom, and Greg Tripoli is going to be our MC for the night. On March 30th, it's for a prom for adults, or Greg, you had said adults that are over 21, but really are kids. Age only, right. Partying like it's 1969. So if anybody is interested, you have information also on the tables with regards to our prom. Hopefully it's going to be a fun night for everyone. Patty, am I missing anything? Okay. I've talked a lot. I could keep talking. I say anybody who wants to listen to me, I'll talk. Does anybody have any questions? Oh. Did anybody learn anything? Okay, good.
Okay, good. All right, we have a question over here.
Thank you. Yes, very informative. But I wonder if you have a problem with compliance Since this is a family issue, do you have a real challenge getting the children to follow through with their medical care and any other mental health supportive services that they need? And how do you deal with that?
What I can say to you is we've seen an increase in compliance because everybody's there, to be honest with you. Because they have Child Protective there and advocacy, medical and mental health, what we've been seeing since August anyways, again, we're bringing in all kinds of new statistics, which are great, but we instantly, instead of referring them to the medical or to the mental health, our advocates are literally making the appointments right then and there. And I think what's happening is because the advocates and Child Protective are there and encouraging them and saying come back to the same building, I think we are seeing I can't give you numbers, to be honest with you, but we're seeing that people are following through and they're showing up for their medical and their mental health because I think they're seeing friendly faces and they're connecting, to be honest with you. Not that that wasn't necessarily happening before, but I think that because we're making those appointments right then and there instead of a referral, they're following through more.
Good morning. I think this is another example of schizophrenia in this community where we work very hard for the children, and then we elect a congresswoman who was against practically everything you've said. So in this environment, what do we do with religious institutions who support you and, on the other hand, do nothing to educate their constituency? What do we do with the general public who thinks that Planned Parenthood, where every child should be a wanted child, is the evil incarnate? Can you help put some of the stuff into perspective for me?
I've personally diagnosed myself as passive aggressive. It's really about education. I can't tell you enough. It's about education and being paid. I know we all are being very patient, but it is about being patient. We did a town hall meeting in January that was televised. We're educating, and I say we, the team is educating the community about child abuse and educating adults about signs and symptoms of child abuse and encouraging adults to talk about child abuse and then report child abuse. But I think that we need to continue that education piece. Child abuse, nobody likes to talk about. Nobody likes to talk about. Again, I say this all the time. Imagine taking me to a party and somebody says to me, what do you do for a living? People run the other way. They don't want to talk about it. It makes them uncomfortable. With all the things that have been happening in our community, we have to embrace that and continue this conversation. I know I'm not answering your question with regards to plan. Well, I'm child abuse. I'm not Planned Parenthood, I guess. That's we, meaning the child abuse team, have to continue to advocate for our kids and make sure that the community understands that it happens in our community, and we have to continue to support the team and to make sure people are making those phone calls.
Is it a case... you talked about the numbers and the ages of the children, but I know there's probably no typical, but are we usually talking about family members and or people who know the children as opposed to someone who was just on the street corner, you know, what we're all told about, don't get in the car with the guy with the candy or whatever.
Right. 90% of the people that abuse our children are people that they know, love, and trust. So I grew up with stranger danger. It's not necessarily stranger danger. It's 90% of the people that we know, love, and trust that are abusing our children. So again, that's a difficult conversation to think that family members are actually abusing our children. Nobody wants to think about that. That's why we have to have those conversations, and we have to support our children when... And kids, just recently, really quick, I'm sorry. Recently, we had a group of college students that came in, and we were talking about different things. And her stepson came home and said that he was on the bus alone with the bus driver. And the bus driver started giving him money and candy. he didn't come right out and disclose that he was uncomfortable with the bus driver. He was talking in generality about something. That stepmother, though, was able to get those cues and to realize that this are red flags, and hopefully, and she did, she went to the school and said this was inappropriate. Kids aren't going to necessarily come right out and disclose. We as a community have to start knowing those signs so we can protect them.
Quick clarification.
So, Julie, on behalf of Planned Parenthood, I would just like to acknowledge that we work together through the Onondaga Community Sexual Trauma Task Force.
Yes, we do. Thank you. Sorry.
I actually have two questions. The first is there one segment of the population that tends to be your greatest source of reporting incidents, such as teachers or whatever? And the other question is there any correlation between incidences of bullying and abuse, either sexual or maltreatment of some sort?
The first question is, I just talked about bullying.
There was
a segment of
the population.
Yeah,
segment of
It's across, it doesn't matter where you live, what your ethnicity, economic status, it happens throughout our community. There have been research in the last few years where they're saying that there is an increase of serious physical abuse because of the economy. So I think there are definitely at-risk groups that are more likely to have that stress in their lives and will lash out on children. Bullying, we see kids that either have been bullied. We also see kids that are hurting animals. Those definitely are signs. They're not necessarily or indicators. Doesn't necessarily mean that there is sexual abuse or physical violence at home, but there's definitely those are signs that, yes, we might have something going on in the home. I'm sorry, I'm kind of a skits right now. Mandated reporters. The people that are calling most of the time are mandated reporters to the child abuse hotline. They're the ones that call Child Protective. Onondaga County, the majority are the teachers, the social workers, the medical profession that are making those phone calls. I'm sorry.
Got it. That's fine.
Would you say a few more words about how you get calls, how you're notified that someone's being abused?
Again, McMahon Ryan doesn't get those phone calls. It goes through the Onondaga County Child Abuse Hotline or the New York State Child Abuse Hotline. Those calls come from either mandated reporters or concerned individuals. The Department of Social Services gets a report, and then they make a decision with regards to what kind of a case it is, what kind of caseworker goes out, and then also they do that joint investigation with law enforcement. Those children come through our building because law enforcement and Child Protective are there for the majority. Some of them are referred through medical. They might not have a hotline call. They might come for a medical appointment or a mental health. But the majority of them are coming because of the hotline calls.
I just wondered, what are your funding sources?
Very good question. We get one grant from the Office of Children and Family Services that is about $134,000. We also, with the county, thank God to Department of Social Services and the county exec's office, we've been able to tap into what we call preventive services dollars. It's not prevention. They categorized it wrong. It's mandated services for a child that actually is either been suspected of being abused or has been abused. We get reimbursement because we have all those different agencies in that building, so law enforcement, Child Protective, medical, mental health. We went to try to see if there was any other funding resources in New York State, and Oneida County was doing this. So we came back to the county, and the county agreed that we could actually take this preventive services to actually pay for our administrative costs. That's a huge portion. We would not have a child advocacy center here if the county didn't allow us to take advantage, not in a good way, that funding source. United Way also gives us some money for our mental health program. And then a lot is fundraising.
Julie, you're doing a great job. One question I have, what are any specific red flags that we might not be aware of in adult children issues?
Especially with sex abuse, it's very hard to identify because there aren't those physical outside indicators. But young children who are talking about things that are sexual beyond their years, they might be being exposed to pornography, they might be being abused. If children are acting out on other children, that might be an indicator also. We've had some children that are bedwetting when they're 11, 12, 13, 14 years old. It's an indicator. I'm not saying necessarily they're being sexually abused, but that might be something that you would want to look into. Become their personality changes. They become either withdrawn or they become rebellious. Anorexia, bulimia, all those different things can be indicators, especially for teenagers in the pre-pubescent years. Physical abuse, if the abuse is in uncommon areas, their ears. We've had some children that have had their blood capsule, in their ears pinched so hard that they're being abused. Cigarette burns, submersion burns, where infants have actually been submerged in hot water and they've been burned. Bruising on the back of their legs instead of on their fronts. We all can see toddlers falling down frontwards, but if it's in the back, sometimes that can be an indicator for serious physical abuse.
Thank you. How about I'm sure that when this comes up in a family, the family is like, oh, Uncle Ed or whomever, that, can't be. So, but on the other hand, there are people who, maybe are always talking about sexual, kind of making sexual innuendos or whatever. Is there any way to make the connection, identify that? Oh yeah, this the child is exhibiting some of the signs, and on the other hand, there's this person that they've been around who could that be the one, whether it's a family member or bus driver or whatever.
It could be. Again, it's so hard. Most of the children don't disclose right away, and again, it's due to manipulation, scared. They don't want to disrupt the family. There's this guilt. A lot of time it's not threats. It's really less threatening. So it could be that individual. It's really, we as parents and adults, we teach our kids fire safety. We teach them how to walk across the street. We need to start talking about personal safety. We need to start talking to our kids in an early age about who are the safe adults in their lives, and to be able to tell them that they can go to those adults and those adults will believe them and support them so that they will be safe.
I wonder if you could talk a little bit about what your connection as an agency is with the school system. That is to say, do you meet? Are they part of what you're doing? Could you describe that?
Sure. We do. In the recent years, we've been doing a lot of collaboration with the Syracuse City School Districts and Liverpool and West Hill through our High Five program. So we are doing a lot of collaboration with those different school districts. But also, we'll go and we'll speak to their school social workers. Just recently, we went over to the Teacher Center over on East or West Fayette Street for the Syracuse School District. And again, it's about educating those social workers and those people in the schools to understand that there is this team, there is a child advocacy center, there are resources. So the more and more that we can get into the schools, it's really hard to get into the schools, and because they have so many other mandates that they have to do, it's really hard to get into the schools. Not that they don't want us, but it's really hard.
Mm-hmm. I was just going to ask, as I walk across the room, could you give us
the website so that if anybody here or anyone listening wants to find out more.
Sure. It's www.mcmahonryan.org. And if you take one of the brochures, it should be also on our brochure.
Julie, no child abuse is acceptable, of course, but do you have to address certain different cultures as they come through and how they might view their way of disciplining or their way of interacting with their children? How do you handle that?
Absolutely. I mean, Syracuse and Onondaga County, for its history, has been a melting pot for a lot of immigrants and refugees. I think that as a team, we are trying to keep that diversity in culture, but we still have a lot to learn. Just recently we had a family, I think from Burma, and it was a medical condition. And again, we had to learn why they were so hesitant to get this medical attention. So we needed to have the interpreter, and we had to bring those two cultures, our culture, meaning the United States, in the Burmese culture, to try to make the family understand that because now you're in the United States, these are the things that we really need to have happen. It's an ongoing. We as a community, and this is my personal, we need to do more to have that cultural diversity especially. We as a team right now are working on a cultural diversity plan so that we can address some of those issues.
Thank you, Julie Cecil from the McMahon-Ryan Center.